Hey, folks. Thanks for tuning in the BAM podcast. This is your host, Mike Laffrey. And I was literally just finishing up Halloween candy as the light came on. And that's very appropriate because this episode, we're talking about the, I guess we'd kind of badly define it as the kids on bikes dealing with supernatural stuff genre. Stranger Things, It, E.T., Goonies, Monster Squad, various other movies from the 80s perhaps Jacob can remind us of. And that brings me to my first point. Co-host today is Jacob Blackman. How you doing, Jacob?
Hello, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And next up, our guest is, Darren, I forgot your last name. Please remind me.
Last name is Miller.
Darren Miller. And Darren, right now, is running a Kickstarter. If you look for Monster Hunters Club on Kickstarter right now, it's for Savage Worlds. Yay, Savage Worlds. And it's doing really well. Of a $6,000 goal, he's raised almost $11,000 as of this moment right now. And
wow.
Darren, just give us a, I mean, you're basically going right for this niche of, you know, It, Stranger Things, spunky kids in the 80s on bicycles dealing with powers beyond their ken.
It's something I've always been interested in. And the idea for a Savage World setting kind of generated back in like March or so of 2015. And I'm looking around that this doesn't exist in Savage World. So, and then as I started putting out feelers and developing this thing, then that re-interest in nostalgia of the 80s started to hit, and it's now time for this.
Oh yeah, I would agree. Nostalgia is selling like crack pancakes. It's definitely big business. Hey Jacob, what can you think of some other movies that would belong in this genre? I mean, we've got Goonies, Monster Squad, E.T.
I'm a little hard pressed to come up with a few others. Let's see. There's
Lost Boys.
Possibly Lost Boys. Yeah, definitely Lost Bright Boys. Actually, the most recent episode of Legends of Tomorrow touched on this. They went back to 1980s and they had adventure with a young kid and an alien.
Oh, okay. Well, that sounds like an homage, or at least a tip of the hat. You know, you mentioned one, Darren, here on your Kickstarter page, Super 8, that J.J. Abrams movie I had totally forgotten about even existed, but that's...
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
Right, Super 8, and there's... even if you look at it, like Adventures in Babysitting, things like that, it was always that kids having adventures, even if there's not overt supernatural.
Well, in Goonies, I mean, that's probably an archetype of the genre, and there's no real supernatural elements in there. I mean, there's dead pirates, but, you know.
It originally had a monster.
That really? Scene
was cut. Yes. There was a giant octopus.
Oh, okay.
I think they cut out the giant octopus scene.
Yep.
You know,
but they had enough, like, skeletons and everything to freak people out.
Right.
You know, Bob's Burgers did a Goonies tribute episode a few seasons back, and they got Cyndi Lauper to do the closing credits song. That's kind of cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. That's great.
It's a show worth checking out. So we were talking about, Monster Squad, Fright Night, It, Super 8. I just wanted to remark upon Super 8. You know, J.J. Abrams has this weird talent. I'm not to be too negative, but like, he makes movies that entertain me, and then I forget everything that happened in them. In the case of Super 8, even forgot it existed until it came up just now. It's like Chinese food entertainment. Just, hey, that was nice, and it's gone.
Yeah, there's actually a couple of sequences in Stranger Things Season 2 that are very Super 8 reminiscent.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I did a deep dive on Super 8 in preparation of this podcast. I finished watching Stranger Things 2 earlier this week. Watched season 1 over the last couple of days working from home. Started season 2 again. And in the middle of that, I watched the Beyond Stranger Things with Jim Rausch on Netflix, which is the talk show about Stranger Things where you get the actors to, you know, basically do DVD commentary. And so, yeah, it's kind of on my pores right now. I got to say, do you guys have a preference, season 1, season 2? Someone online, maybe it was Andrew Collis, he compared season 1 to D&D and season 2 to Shadowrun.
I can see that.
Yeah, I can see that too. Jacob, what do you think?
I would honestly say it's more Call of Cthulhu than Shadowrun season 2, at least. Ooh. It's much more Call of Cthulhu, cuz you're dealing with things from beyond even more so than the first season. intruding on our world. And let's just say right now, we are going to spoiler the heck out of this show. So if you haven't seen season one or two of Stranger Things, you might want to stop listening now.
That is great.
This is the point where you'll want to stop. And if you do stop this podcast, we'll go over to Kickstarter. Check out Monster Hunters Club, because it looks like it's going to be a great game. And you guys have any kind of demo online people can check out, or previews, that kind of thing?
There is a preview available on DriveThruRPG right now. It is free preview. It's got a few of our archetypes. It's got some sample rules and stuff, and like the background, the setup of the whole thing. There is also, if you're a backer, even if you just back for $2, adventure that Tommy Brownell wrote, and there are a set of 6 pre-generated characters that you can use to play that adventure. So it's a great way to check the setting out.
All right, and we'll make sure to throw up these the links to the Kickstarter and the DriveThruRPG demo on the show notes. So definitely worth your time to check out. Tommy Brownell, good guy, friend of the podcast. He has previously been a judge in the very illustrious BAMFies Awards show. So glad to hear Tommy's keeping busy.
He's a great guy. He's been right on the same wavelength of this thing with me right from the beginning.
You chuckle, but the BAMFies are a prestigious. Well, they're not. It's kind of a fan award. And while I'm talking, I should go ahead and mention this. BAMFies are an award we do every year to shine a spotlight on superhero RPGs, because we noticed they don't get a lot of awards from the Ennies and the Origins and other industry awards. So check out bamfies.blogspot.com. It's the awards run every year. Right now we're having the open call for nominees. Every year we have a big Gamer's Choice poll, which is basically every single superhero RPG product released in the last year. And we got them all gathered, and then we're going to have a big open vote in a few weeks. And see which one wins the popularity contest. And we also invite a panel of industry folks like Tommy, and we've had Steve Kenson a few years, Sean Patrick Fannett, and they come and basically do spotlight awards for specific products they want to highlight. So anyway, it's not nearly as serious as the Ennies. We're probably way more serious than the Grammys. So check it out, manfees.blogspot.com. That's my plug. Now, spoilers. Goddamn, poor Sean Astin.
I think it's definitely worth mentioning the spoilers, because if you have not seen either season one or season two of Stranger Things, this is a series you want to go in cold, not knowing what it's about. You will so enjoy not knowing what it's about. The original trailer for Stranger Things showed absolutely nothing, and it was amazing to watch. And you know, Going into Stranger Things 2, we knew what was happening. We knew there were strange things after watching season 1, and it was just as good, in my opinion. They did an excellent job maintaining the feel of everything they had set up.
I agree. Darren, what do you think?
Oh, I definitely agree. The show wasn't perfect. It wasn't a perfect season, but it was very strong. It was the story, the development, the character arcs. I think to a greater degree than season one. In season one, the characters didn't really have good, solid arcs of development, whereas in season two, they did get to do that.
I think maybe Steve had the most interesting character arc in season one.
He did. It was very abbreviated, though, and that season two really builds on that.
I would agree. Poor Sean Astin, yep. Right?
Oh man, he's starting to get that reputation like Sean Bean, where you just can't live through a series. I had high hopes for him when I saw him in The Strain, and then he dies, and I was hoping that he would make it through this, and then oh, that was heartbreaking.
Yeah. I mean, it was, if you're going to have a heroic death scene, though, I mean, his was, you know.
Oh, he went to Valhalla.
Very effective.
Yeah, he went out like Sean Bean in the Lord of the Rings movies. He really went out well. But
And I love, there was, you know, if you talk about people that they brought in for the season, Paul Reiser kind of, his role was a lot of an homage to his role in Aliens.
Yeah, I mean, from the very first moment, you're like, oh, shit, it's Paul Reiser in a movie with monsters. Don't trust him. It's Paul Reiser. Don't you know who he is?
Yeah. Yeah, that is exactly what I and my roommates were saying the entire time. And he turns out to be this great character.
Yeah, he's more like the Paul Reiser from Mad About You. It's yeah.
But the scene where he's at Mike's bedside when they first bring Mike in, and he's, you know, he's joking with him, and he's kind of having that rapport. It's just like the scene where he's at Ripley's bedside. I mean, it's very, very close.
Yeah, yeah. I would definitely agree. It's good to see Paul Reiser again, because he's kind of – I saw a movie he did like 5 years ago, and since then he's just kind of been gone. Mm-hmm. So I spoke again – we're doing a writer. It's good to see her again, because last time I saw her in a movie, it was either a store camera footage or maybe the Adam Sandler movie, one of those two. So it's good to see her back, and she does a great job in these. So, yeah.
Yes.
A good. So what I really like the bit where they go to, is it Pittsburgh? And 11 meets up with 8?
That's Chicago.
That's Chicago. Okay. All right. So it starts out, they're in Pittsburgh. Her and her punk friends, and I guess they moved to Chicago. Yeah, I thought that was a cool little, you know, them pulling off heists and, you know, doing their thing and 11 getting mixed up with them. I really enjoyed that sequence, but a lot of critics have said that was the weakest part of the season. What do you guys think?
Well, honestly, I think it's set up for the next season because when you have 11, obviously there has to be 1 through 10. So what happened with them? And it was good to find out that there was actually more than one surviving subject from all those psychic experiments. And I'm sure we will see more in the next season.
So I felt like it didn't quite fit this season. It was like, okay, this is test footage for a spinoff series or a future season. It doesn't mean it was bad. It really showed Eleven's development, but it was just so out of character for everything else they had done previously and after that.
Yeah, it did kind of seem like world building for season 3.
It did.
Which will likely be a comeback vehicle for Sarah Michelle Gellar. I'm just spitballing here. I don't know, but it'd be kind of hilarious if it was. But yeah, it was kind of incongruous, but I thought it, you know, 11 goes off and has her own adventure in the big city, and then she realizes she has to go back home. And yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing more about that particular plot line. Poor Will. Does Will have the least amount of character development as like anybody?
He got a lot more screen time than he did in season 1.
Well, that's true, but that's not saying much.
This is very true.
He was the MacGuffin for season 1. He was the drive to get everyone moving in season 1. Whereas in this, he's still kind of the MacGuffin, but because of the thing that's affecting him, it's more, you get a lot more screen time with him. But you also get a little more sense of what the thing on the other side is about, you know, especially with the 8th episode where they cite the Mind Flayer. It's very much like they describe, and you have to see Will's reaction to all that.
You guys think they have any kind of agreement with Hasbro?
I mean, it's funny because in the Beyond Stranger Things, where they talk about, you know, last season we were playing D&D, and this season we don't have a lot of D&D. We have video games because our characters grew up. And the Duffer Brothers were like, whoa, whoa, wait a minute. We still play, and you don't grow out of role-playing games.
Yeah, that was a funny bit. A lot of people do grow out of role-playing games, though. I mean, just to be fair. I mean, obviously people on this phone call didn't. But you know, I know a lot of folks who played through high school, maybe into college, and they're like, I don't have time anymore. So, I mean, hell, the last time I played – go ahead.
Ultimately, one of the reasons people get out of a role-playing game is simply the fact that they don't have the time for it. It is, when you're an adult, it's hard to make the time to, you know, with everyone's conflicting job schedules and family relationships and duties and all that you have to do. It's very difficult to get 3 to 4 people together on a regular basis, and that's ultimately why people usually drop role-playing games.
Oh shoot, the last time I played, I think it was with you, Jacob, and we were doing that that Supers revised edition where I was the Kung Fu robot. And that's been
one of the only reasons I'm able to continue playing is because all of my roommates are my game group. Oh. And we set aside Saturdays for that.
That's nice.
That is super handy. Darren, how about you? How often do you play?
Now we're supposed to play every week, but we are having those scheduling issues right now. One of our members of our group just moved to New Jersey, and we're in South Carolina. And so, you know, I'm down a member, and we were a little bit small to begin with. So if one person can't make it or two people can't make it, then it throws everything into jeopardy for that week. So I'd say, like, since September 1st, we've played, like, maybe two or three times.
Mm. Yeah, that's about where I'm at. It's been at least 3 or 4 months since I've played. I mean, board games and card games I'll play a lot because I can, you know, get the wife into it or invite some people over. But it's hard to get the buy-in for, hey, you want to write up some character backstories and spend 48 hours – every couple of weeks doing that, and it's but hey, we're getting off subject. Stranger Things. So what do you guys think happens in season 3?
Oh, I am terrible at speculating these sorts of things, but I think we're going to see more of the thing from the other side trying to intrude. It's just going to try to find some other way since it can no longer use the portal. I'm sure we will be seeing more of the other psychics. At least the one new one we've seen, but
I think they've set us up for Eleven's death.
How so?
They kept replaying that part where they said you have a wound inside you and it's festering and it will eventually kill you. And they played that many times. It's almost like the more she uses her powers, the closer she gets to like having an aneurysm or some sort of brain rupture.
Yeah, they really didn't play up the. In the first season, you know, the whole nose-blood thing was a big deal, and she passes out, and this one, nose-blood's just kind of, oh, hey, there it is. I mean, at the end, when she goes, you know, full Super Saiyan, and she's closing the gate, it's, you know, she passes out, but it was much less a concern this season.
Yeah, I think her powers have definitely grown since the first season.
Do you think they're going to do something where some of the psychics get possessed by this shadow creature?
Ooh.
Then you'll have a psychic war?
That's an interesting thought.
That has a strong possibility, given they've said it's more like a hive mind and a virus. And you know, we saw that black stuff leave Will, but it's still on our world.
Yeah. Well, maybe they could do an homage to all the alien invasion / human takeover films, like Body Snatchers and that kind of thing. Day of the Triffids.
That black stuff leaving Will kind of reminded me of the demons leaving a person in Supernatural.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Crossover. There you go. This would be like a 20-minute thing for the Winchester brothers. Although I think most things would be a 20-minute thing for the Winchester brothers.
Oh.
Because they spend the rest of the rest of the 40 minutes arguing with each other.
Arguing, eating pie, sulking in the bunker. Yeah, exactly. So, I can't believe that show's still going on. I mean, holy shit, like 13 seasons.
They have announced that the 15th season will be the last.
Yeah, well, they killed most everybody off last season, so it's probably time. So, yeah. But hey, we're talking.
I think it was time after season 5.
Yeah, a lot of people think that, yeah, including my wife. She's the only reason I'm even aware the show exists, and she really wishes they kind of stopped in season 5, so... But yeah. So any other thoughts on Stranger Things?
As far as I know, the Duffer brothers say they're going to continue it. Unlike Supernatural, the Duffer brothers say they're going to continue it as long as they have ideas. Once they stop coming up with ideas, they plan on wrapping it up. So at least we know they have, and I'll trust them to meet that goal.
And they've already started work on season 3.
So. Well, I mean, these kids are growing up so fast. I mean, they just seem like junior high schoolers or late grade schoolers last season. And now, I mean, they definitely look like they're ready to be in high school.
Well, there were early junior high schools last season. I mean, it's only been a year.
Yeah, that's true.
But all the actors are hitting those growth spurts that will, you know, really make them look significantly older. I mean, if you've ever had kids, then you know that you hit that age, and then all of a sudden, wow, look, you look like a teenager now.
Yeah, it happens overnight. Yeah.
They'll definitely have to be doing some more coming-of-age stories with the next season, considering they should be in high school next season.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Carl in The Walking Dead. He's still like 10 years old in the comic book, and in the TV show, he's got, you know, gray in his temples, and he's got arthritis, and, you know, he's wondering how he's ever going to retire in a zombie apocalypse. So, you know, it's one of those things.
The biggest question for me is Steve. Like, Steve will be out of high school next season. He'll be college age. I mean, what is he going to do?
In season one, beginning of season two, he was despairing about going to college and working on his essay and saying to Nancy, you know, maybe I'll just work for my dad. That wouldn't be so bad, right? So
does he become Hopper's deputy? Is that?
Who's Steve's dad?
We haven't seen Steve's dad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We saw more families in this one than we had in the previous season, but we haven't seen Steve's family.
Yeah. I mean, especially when it was nice seeing Steve and Dustin together. Oh, poor Dustin, not seeing at the dance.
Oh, that broke my heart.
Yeah. Nancy was right. Girls that age are stupid. They'll eventually grow out of it.
I was reading someone's post. I forget, it might have been on Culture Vulture talking about why Nancy is the worst person in the world. And her treatment of Steve and some of the things she said in the show were the reasons that they mentioned. But, yeah. I mean, Steve kind of got a raw deal, right?
He did get a raw deal.
Yeah. But again, people are dumb in their teenage years. They're still developing. They don't know what they want as much as they might seem like adults yet.
And just a year ago in the chronology of the show, Steve was not a nice guy.
No, he was kind of a jerk. I mean, he redeemed himself towards the end there with the baseball bat and the house and everything. But, he was definitely sort of an 80s archetype of, a jerky jock type. So, Darren, talking about your game specifically, how do you guys, you know, model like those kind of character arcs and try to get that vibe from those kind of, you know, that kind of media into Savage Worlds?
So one of the things that we have that you don't find in a lot of Savage World settings are really strong, fleshed out but customizable archetypes. Whereas most Savage Worlds characters are kind of like a blank slate, and you select a suite of edges and hindrances and have a lot more. It's like you're picking out of a catalog almost. You're going to the core book and you're saying, I want to do this, I want to do that. We start our archetypes each start with kind of a suite of things. Like your brain starts out with, you get this and you can choose this path and you can take that. So it kind of narrows down your choices at first and puts you in kind of a, because all of those 80s movies and Stranger Things have those, you have those stereotypical characters. Like you have the fat kid and the smart kid and you have all those different things. So we wanted to really try to emulate that in the game as well.
Okay. Cool. What archetypes for the kids in Stranger Things?
One of the things, really, if you look at Eleven, that's the easiest one because she is definitely that psychokinetic, kind of in the mold of Charlie from Firestarter or Carrie.
Okay. How about Dustin?
Dustin is, I would almost call him like a mouth type character. Like he's always talking, he's always running his mouth, he's got to fill space with sound.
Yeah, he's kind of like Mike's character in It. I don't know who the character is, but the guy who played Mike, who was playing the mouthy guy in It.
Richie Tozier.
Yeah, that guy.
Very much so. I think he's not quite as funny, but he does fill that same role. And he plays double duty because you always see him at the candy bars and everything. So he's almost like the sort of chunk role as well.
Yeah, when he on Beyond Stranger Things, they're talking candy bars, and he was like, oh, I got my top three right here. Steve was next to him. He was like, you like Reese's Fast Break? Really? People like those? But all right, I'm looking at your archetypes right here. You got the brain. All right, that makes sense. The clown, okay. Sample gear, okay. So, which is previous, so he's got the two archetypes there. So, I love the artwork in this, too. It's very atmospheric.
Yeah, the design is Carl Kiesler. I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he does some great character sheets. He does some great games at cons that he goes to. And he took a look at the the writing, what we had, and he just rolled with it. And I think it really captures what we were looking for better than I could have even imagined.
Nice. Let's see. So what kind of support? I mean, you guys have already exceeded your main goal. You guys are like 4,000 bucks over it. What kind of stretch goals and additional supporting products are you going to roll out for this?
We have already unlocked One Sheet Adventures by Danny James Walsh, who he is one of the licensees, the licensee manager for Pinnacle. He also kind of was the guy behind those Savage Tales of Horror books that came out. And he wrote a great 80s adventure in one of those. That's why he was one of the first adventure writers I thought of for stretch goals, is because he wrote an 80s adventure in one of those called The Retreat, which is fantastic. We also have unlocked a one-sheet adventure by Eric Lamoureux, who also has some great adventures out there as well. He did Cauldron Full of Mischief for Favorable Environments. He's done some stuff for Just Insert Imagination. Those Bada Bing, Bada Boom, and Forget About It. Those are Eric's.
Oh, okay.
We have unlocked a complete mini campaign that Tommy Brownell is going to write, because we really wanted some rules that we could introduce where you could play the adult characters and have them flash back to these childhood traumas and fighting monsters. So Tommy's going to write a whole mini campaign that centers around that and includes the rules to do those flashbacks.
Okay. So if you really want to play it, that's the way you can go.
There is definitely a way to play that.
So you run a lot of horror games yourself, Darren?
What was that?
Do you run a lot of horror games yourself?
I do run a lot of my two favorite genres are horror and like a neo-noir, sort of like Memento, that kind of thing. So those are my two. That's where I come from, those two genres.
Do you have any tips as a GM for running a good horror game? Because that can be awfully challenging.
Read Nightmares of Mine by Ken Haidt. That is like my horror game running Bible, just about. It is just a fantastic book for any horror GM of any game.
Really? I've never heard of that one.
Ken is pretty much the master of horror role-playing games, so that's pretty much the best advice you're going to get.
Yeah, find his book. He wrote it for... gosh, I can't even remember the company that he wrote it for, but it's not a huge volume. It's just a small book, but it does. It has like the dials that you can turn, all the different, you know, how gross do you want to go? How cosmic do you want to go? How survival do you want to go? And just really how to adjust those dials within the game and how to capture the mood of horror in role-playing games. And it's really, like, that book is the best advice I could point anybody to. And if you want, I can give you a link to post up on that book.
Yeah, if you could, that would be great. The title was Nightmare of the Mind?
Of Nightmares of Mine.
Of Mine, as in belonging to me. Okay, Kenneth Haidt, PDF. Okay, cool. So let's... I have literally never heard of that before. Looks like it's for Iron Crown.
Okay, yeah, and they actually reprinted some of the information from there in the GURPS Horror. I believe it was the third edition of GURPS Horror. It reprinted some of that material in there as well.
Okay, all right. So if you're interested in running horror, that's a good book to read. Do you have any tips that you could give besides just go read Ken Haidt that you might share with our listeners?
This description. Horror is all about description. It's all about the atmosphere. It's all about keeping folks in the game. If you can, I know that, you know, they got to play scared characters, but if you can actually scare the person a little bit, or at least get them in the mindset of what it would be like to be scared of. A great example is have you heard of the War of the Dead campaign for Savage Worlds?
Oh, yeah, I have. Daring Entertainment, I think, yeah.
Daring Entertainment is a zombie game. I ran that, and they were on the cruise ship. And one of my players was an EMT in his day job or night job, as the case may be. And they came upon the cabin where the daughter has contracted the zombie virus, and you have to tell the father, and you know, you have to come up with a solution. What are you going to do with this girl? What are you going to do with the dad? And I brought an adult to tears with that. He just, you know, because that's what he did for a living, and here he captured that in the game and the kind of horror of what that would be like, and that really caught over to everybody at the table, just like, wow, this is this is heavy. And a lot of people who might not have wanted to play a zombie game when we first started were like, okay, yeah, this is serious. This isn't just like some light zombie game. This is going to be, you know, emotionally wrenching all the way through. And it was. It was a great, great run of that game. We played it for 2 years.
Oh, cool. So this guy was an EMT in his day job?
He was.
The player? Oh, yeah. If you ever think you have bad work stories, talk to an EMT. Holy shit. Put things in perspective real fast.
Yeah, it was actually real challenging because in my group at the time, I had an EMT and a police officer. So a cop and a paramedic I'm running horror games for. And, that can be a challenge, especially modern horror.
Yeah, they've probably seen a lot of stuff that we would consider scary.
Right.
So, okay, cool. Good to know. Well, we're getting to that point. We've been talking for coming up on 40 minutes. Any closing thoughts? Anything else you want to talk about in terms of 80s Kids on Bikes movies or Stranger Things or the game in specifics?
Well, we were talking about archetypes. I just wanted to mention that we do have 18 archetypes in the book. So pretty much any of those movies. And one movie that we didn't mention is The Explorers. I'll throw that one out there.
The Explorers. That was a good one.
What are you guys talking about?
The Explorers? You've never seen that?
I've never even heard of this movie. What are you talking about?
It's got River Phoenix.
Yep.
Okay, I have to Google it.
It was more of a science fiction than horror, where dealing with prophetic dreams sent to them by aliens that lead them to want to go into space.
Oh. And okay. Holy shit!
It's a pretty decent movie. Up to a point.
There is an ending thing that is interesting.
Yeah. I'd literally never heard of this before, and I was watching movies, especially science fiction movies, in that time frame, and I somehow missed this one completely.
I personally really enjoyed Explorers up to a point. There is a Zinge moment, and I will explain that. When watching, what's the name of this film? Congo. There is that terrible movie everyone hates called Congo. Whereas if you actually watch it, is a really good movie for its characters and has some interesting, fun scenes. Up until the moment they get to the lost city of Zinge. The instant Tim Curry's character says, it is Zinge. If you turn the movie off at that moment, it is a fantastic movie. It is an amazing movie. One, great characters, delightful. If you continue watching after he says it is Zinge and watch all the stuff that happens in Zinge, you will think Congo is the most terrible movie you've ever seen. Oh my God, that was fake, stupid, stupid, stupid.
That's with all the CGI albino gorillas who come out of the jungle, right?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
I feel that same way about Explorers. Explorers is a great movie up to a point. But I would have to ruin that for you by telling you to.
You know, we just spoiled Stranger Things season 1 and 2. Barb dies, in case we didn't say it. So, you know, you can go ahead and spoil a 30-year-old movie. It's fine.
Explorers is a fantastic movie up until the moment they step foot on the alien ship.
They try to handle what impact pop culture would have on an alien species who was just knowing about who we are from our pop culture, and they handle it very clumsily and goofily.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is really bad once they get on the alien ship.
Okay.
Now, once they get off the alien ship, it's a good movie again.
That is exactly correct.
Okay. Damn. All right. Well, that's a very specific viewing guide for that movie. I'll keep that in mind if that ever comes up.
That part was written for the kid that's watching it with you. They'll have fun at that part, whereas they were lost most of the movie, and you'll be lost at that part, and then the ending.
The ending's pretty bad then?
Well, like you said, after they get off the ship, then everything kind of goes back like, you get on the alien spaceship.
Back to the magical shark, right?
And then you jump back over the shark when they get off the alien spaceship, if that's possible.
Okay. So there you go. That's a good viewing guide for explorers. 1984 movie. All right, 1985. Sorry. With River Phoenix and Ethan Hawke and Jason. Yeah. Wow. A lot of people were in that movie.
It's a good film.
All right, cool. Good to know. All right, once again, Monster Hunters Club. It's for Savage Worlds. It's on Kickstarter right now. You can find the free preview on DriveThruRPG. We'll have links in the show notes. Darren, any closing thoughts?
I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a lot of fun. I wish I had known about this thing sooner.
Oh, it's all good, man. Glad to have you. Can have you back sometime. We do occasionally try to dust off the subject of horror and talk about the best way to run games and this and that. So, love to have you back at some point.
That'd be great. I'd love to be on for a GMing advice sort of thing.
Okay. What was that horrible noise?
That was a Siberian Husky.
Oh, okay. All right. That was it was reminding me of some of the screeching from Stranger Things. Jacob, any closing thoughts?
I would like to push the most recent release of Superpowered Legends. It is called Henchmen for Hire and features a trio of minor jobber villains who don't want to take over the world. They're just in it for the money. So if you're looking for a couple of villains to just use as mercenaries or throwaway villains for your superhero campaign, please check out Superpowered Legends, Henchmen for Hire.
That's for Mutants and Masterminds, Third Ed. Who are these guys analogs to in the Marvel Universe?
Let's see. There is a bear-suited guy who is similar to the Marvel character Grizzly. I've got a character named Bad Bunny, who I modeled after the very stereotypical Australian kangaroo character who's all about jumping and kicking. And then you've got a character named Deadeye, who is a guy who's really good at throwing shuriken and basically anything he can get his hands on, much like the popular Daredevil character Bulls.
Okay, cool. All right, so check that out on RPG Now right now under the Rogue Genius storefront. So. Darren Miller and Jacob Blackman, thanks for talking to us. Listeners, thanks for being there. And we will catch you next time on the Banff Podcast.
Thank you.